Creative Male Aging, a radio and internet project in which we'll explore and challenge many of the conventions around aging and look particularly at new options for today's older men. I'm Tony Ryan. Welcome to the program.
Many of them have this dream of a sudden quiet life, a relaxed, leisurely life where they can do, in quotes, what I've always wanted to do. But they haven't thought that through often. You know, you want to travel around Australia. Yes, you might want to play golf every day, but it gets boring. And I've had a lot of men say, after 3 months of playing golf, that was it. Or 6 months of traveling around, been there, done that, what's next? How do I fill the day?
We'll hear more from Dr. Don Edgar shortly. Yes, in these 12 programs, we're aiming to move beyond some of the negative stereotypes of ageing as they apply to older men, particularly those stereotypes around slow decline and increasing decrepitude. And, as we will hear, the emphasis is much more on seizing the day. On this journey in producing this series, I met up with many interesting people in four Australian states, and as an older man myself, I've learned much from the many men and women I've interviewed in recent months. Let's return now to Dr. Don Edgar, the retired director of the Australian Institute of Family Studies.
Well, I was running a big research organisation and decided I'd been doing it for long enough. I didn't want to retire. Retirement didn't mean anything to me at all. But then the big question was, what next? And I thought perhaps I could go back to teaching in a university, which I'd done for many years. I actually applied for a couple of jobs in universities and through the interview process basically decided I didn't want to do that at all. But then, unfortunately, I got cancer and had to leave anyway. So it was a retirement forced on me. So then the question was, how do I deal with that? And gradually, of course, because of my background and skills and experience, I wrote. And that was fantastic because as director running a research institute, I'd read everything every one of my staff had been writing, but hadn't had time to much, you know, to write substantial pieces myself. I'd written a lot of articles and newspaper pieces and so on. But so I wrote a book about men, mateship and marriage, which was based on the research. I wrote another book about the work-family balance, the work-life balance. I wrote another book because I'd been involved in a lot of community activities on rebuilding community and rethinking the way government works. And that really sort of got me going. So I also, as part of that, did a lot of public speaking. I was still on various government-related committees and so very occupied.
That word retire is a bit of a worry, isn't it?
Yes. Retire suggests that you are cutting off, you know, you're stopping. There's something that you've been doing and suddenly that's over. You're withdrawing. And it's a ridiculous notion, really, because nobody retires from life. How can you retire from life? So even if when you finish work, paid work, you decide you want to play golf or you want to travel around in a caravan, you haven't retired, you've moved on and you've reinvented something for yourself.
Apart from financial planning for retirement, there's not really much by way of preparing men for this transition.
Men, I think, are a problem because we've been taught to be the so-called breadwinner. In my case, that never really happened. We both earned the bread. But yeah, you're so focused on work, a job, promotion, status, being busy, that's what the male role is, that if when that's suddenly cut off, whether compulsorily or by your own choice, it's an odd feeling, I think, for many men because they've lost that role in life. They've lost the... It's more the loss of pressure, the outward-driven demand to get up, to go to work. There's a routine, and I think a lot of men find it very hard to adjust to not having that compulsory routine every day.
We'll hear more from Dr. Don Edgar in later programs. Here's another first-hand perspective on retirement from Peter, whom I met recently at the Eastwood Community Centre in suburban Adelaide.
Yes, I'm a carpenter and joiner, and I did that for over 50 years. I kind of was forced into retirement when I was 64, when I contracted cancer. But since getting over that, I'm now nearly 12 years past the cancer, and I still work part-time. So I'm kind of semi-retired, mainly because I just like doing the work. I worked in the building trade for 50 years, and I enjoy going to work every single day. So it was a bit hard to just stop suddenly. I'm a pretty avid reader, but you can only read for so many days when the shoals begin to seize up and things like that.
How did you feel at that time when you knew that your working life was over?
I was a bit upset because I had no intentions of retiring at 65. But as the cancer kind of got a grip on me, I knew that the best thing was to do was concentrate on beating that. So I had to accept the fact that I was going to be out of work for quite a while, and I was more or less totally out of work for nearly 4.5 years while I got over the cancer. I did try to go back to work, but at that particular time, I was in a partnership with my brother and our two sons. They were doing all the work and I was doing nothing, and I didn't think it was fair.
But you did overcome the cancer.
Yes, I'm clear of the cancer now. Yes, it was what they call a non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. They tried to operate to remove it, and they couldn't remove it. But when I woke up, he was there to say, you've got, if you could say a good cancer, you've got one that we know how to treat. And I'm very grateful to the Royal Adelaide for the treatment that I had. And as I say, it took nearly 3.5 to 4 years. I was on chemotherapy and radiation for nearly 14, 15 months. And then after that, it took me another 2, 3 years to get something back to normal.
But then you were ready to get back into something.
Yes. As I say, we've quite a large extended family. We've both got families. I'm remarried. So anything, there are a lot of the children, grown adults with children. And whenever they want jobs doing, the first person they ring is me. Generally they'll ring somebody and get a price. And then I'll say, let's have a look at that before you go ahead and commit yourself too much. So that is the way I've been working for the last nearly 7, 8 years. And I still work 2 half-days a week on a regular basis for a chap I've worked for the last 7, 8 years, installing wardrobes. So it's light work and I like doing it.
Well, neither Don nor Peter would seem to fit into some of those more common stereotypes about men and retirement. Professor Alan Peterson from the School of Social Sciences at Monash University in Melbourne takes up this question of stereotypes.
Well, I think there certainly are stereotypes, and I think there are ageist stereotypes which apply to both men and women. And, of course, we're having a debate as we speak about pushing the retirement age up to 70. And 67 was the one that was discussed during the last term of government in the UK when I was living there a few years ago. They were talking about 68. That retirement age at 65 was quite arbitrary, and in the late 19th century, when it was set, it might have made sense when people died not too much later than that, in many cases before that age. But of course, the stereotypes persist, and they've got a longevity which goes beyond actually changes in demographics. And of course, we've got a very aging demographic profile in Australia, as in many other Western developed countries. So that means that we really need to shift our thinking to accommodate that older age group, and the fact that many people are living a very healthy life until the very old, which is usually considered about 85 plus, where a lot of those problems, chronic problems of ageing, become more manifest. But up until that age, many people are still in very good condition, and there's lots of evidence to show that.
Professor Alan Peterson. Dr. Anthony Brown in Sydney has undertaken extensive research into men and their activities in retirement, and is also secretary of the Australian Men's Health Forum. Here he speaks about some of the myths and stereotypes about older men and retirement that we may hear from time to time.
I think there's three main myths of male retirement, and I think these myths are really quite negative and destructive. The first, and probably one of the most pervasive, is the dead in a year. Everybody will tell a story about they know someone, a bloke who retired and he was dead in a year. Statistically, of course, we're all going to know someone who retires and dies in a year. But for most men, that's simply not the case. The other one is, and I call this the veranda on the rocking chair, that you retire and then you put out to pasture. It's a time of slow decline and withdrawal, and the best you can do is sit on the rocking chair and watch the world go by. And then the last one is the underfoot husband. And this myth is that men, after retirement, they're looking for something to do. They're completely lost and they're dependent on their wives for all activities, to the point where they're driving their wives a bit crazy with what are we going to do next, following their wives around at the shopping centres and the supermarkets. Now, all of these myths, I think, have some basis in reality. And for some men, particularly in that point of transition in retirement, it's really true. But it's not true for the majority of men. But there are three touchstones, I think, about how we think about retirement. And they're inaccurate, and I think they're doing a lot of men a lot of harm.
Dr. Anthony Brown. Not so long ago, I came across a new book with an intriguing title. So while in Melbourne recently, I caught up with Dr. Patricia Edgar, author of In Praise of Ageing.
Okay, at this stage of life, in later years, men and women together are facing discrimination. I mean, women have faced it right through their lives in all sorts of ways. Men have escaped a lot of that social discrimination. But men at an older age are discriminated against as much as women, if not more in some cases. But we're all grouped together as an image of frail, dependent, demented people with very little to offer, who are a burden on society. That's what we're being called. And it's a shocking way to address people who are at a really important stage of their life, if not the longest stage of their life.
On the Community Radio Network around Australia, you're listening to the first of a series of 12 programs in which we challenge the stereotypes and explore new options for today's older men. In this first program, we're looking at some of the stereotypes about men and ageing. We'll return shortly to Dr. Patricia Edgar, author of In Praise of Ageing. But first, here's Dr. John Ashfield, a psychotherapist, author and educator in rural South Australia.
Seems to me that in our society we operate on this assumption of inevitability, of decrepitude and debilitation in later life. And I think we see that made quite concrete and immovable in all sorts of ways. I mean, in the way that the media represents old age, the kind of stereotypes and jokes that are present everywhere around us. And I think that even the language that attaches to institutions of care and support for older people, so we have high-level care, low-level care, various forms of care, but there just seems to be little room in all of this for us to view the afternoon of life as an opportunity in which we can perhaps exercise and eat well and do things that enable us to attain the health and well-being of which we are really capable, or of which we are still capable, in order to pursue a continuing meaningful life and happy life, an active life, adventurous life, interesting life. Seems to me that those of us that are, post 60 are painted into a corner of, as I say, this inevitability of decrepitude and deterioration. It's unfair, and I think it's very limiting. It's interesting, on the one hand, that we've got government talking about raising the retirement age, but in most other domains of conversation and discussion about old age, we are still, again, subscribing to this, you know, cultural norm of anticipating decline and debilitation. I think that's really problematic. And I do like that phrase, you know, waiting for God or seizing the day. We need much more of an emphasis on seizing the day rather than sitting around waiting for some inevitable catastrophe to occur. The sort of catastrophe or catastrophes that are depicted as synonymous with the afternoon of life. You know, I mean, young people get sick. Young people injure joints and muscles. Young people have aches and pains. Now, of course, that's more predominant in older age. But we need to have a much more of an emphasis on what we're capable of doing and on pushing the boundaries. There are many people in their 60s, 70s and 80s that are capable of way more physical activity than they're exerting themselves in or experiencing. And again, I think, because rather than being encouraged to continue to remain physically active and adventurous, they've been rather discouraged from that or encouraged to subscribe to this inevitability of deterioration.
Patricia, in your book, In Praise of Aging, one of the early sections is on the gift of age. What did you mean by that?
Well, I think it is a wonderful thing to see people who are in their advanced years, who are still living well, enjoying it, active, achieving, engaged, interested, and they are interesting people. And what motivated me to write the book was that very thing, that I'd turned 70 and was beginning to every now and again experience sort of discrimination of a kind. And I started looking at people who were close to 90 and a few people I knew. And I asked myself the question, now, what is it that makes some people sort of close down their lives, just accept the definition of age that's all around them, but others to just go on and live life to the full. And it's not just that they've got good genes, because I looked into the research very carefully, and genes account for about 30% of your longevity. The major thing that makes a difference is your attitude to life. And nobody reaches advanced years without having gone through considerable trauma. You know, you lose people, you've had ill health, you've all sorts of things go wrong in life. But it's the people who, regardless of those things, sort of meet that challenge, put it behind them, live with it, but they go on. They still plan. They still look forward to enjoying their life, and they do. They are remarkable people.
Author Patricia Edgar, and before her, psychotherapist Dr. John Ashfield from the Australian Institute of Male Health and Studies. Through her current work at the Eastwood Community Centre in Adelaide and earlier in government and adult community education, Sue Ross has an interest in how older men adapt to the retirement challenge and to the role of neighbourhood and community centres in working with men in their retirement years.
What I see, Tony, is men within our community that really are in a different position to where they even were 20 or 25 years ago. I see men in my early days in community where they would retire, and I would see them come and drop their wives off at community to engage in activities, and then they would go home. And they very much had their sense of identity based in activities that they did with men. And we would often struggle in community centres to see men become engaged, regardless of the changing nature of programs. And what I see today, say maybe 25 years on, is that I see far more men engaged in community. And I see that change being a positive change in that they've actually recognised that they don't need to go off and do things by themselves. I think they still do have men's areas that they can work in. But I think that they now actually work far closely within a community centre setting where they mix and integrate what they bring to the centre along with the women that come to the centre.
What's brought about that change?
I would say a greater awareness within our community of men's issues, in particular men's mental health, men retiring at a younger age, so seeing more men in the community that have retired around about 55, but don't necessarily want to actually stop working. They don't want to, you know, go home and sit down and be sedentary. They actually really want an active life after retirement. And I think that's the change as well. I think that we don't have men that retreat to their own sheds, but that actually come out into community where there are men's sheds and that they are far more willing to participate in programs where maybe 25 years ago they weren't.
Retirement, of course, these days can mean 20, 30, even 40 years.
It can, can't it? I was only having a conversation and someone was pointing out that, you know, why is the pension age 65? Well, when that actually got put in place, males used to, you know, predominantly they had about 5 to 6 years after they had retired. But today you see men who retire at 55 or 50 or even 60 to 65 but are living into their 80s. So retirement, it is another part of our life. It's a part of our life that I believe that really needs to have a great consideration when we talk about transitions. We talk about transitioning in the workforce from high-powered work to maybe going into different areas of work as we approach our retirement so that we have a bit more work-life balance. But I think that there is an important place to play both within the workforce and outside of the workforce in transitioning people into retirement. Particularly, as you said, 20, 30 years can be retirement. And that's a long time to be within your own community or within your own family. And as you age, that close family and your friends reduce with passing on. But if you are a member of a broader community, I think that then that actually has a major impact on your health and well-being as you age.
Community Development Coordinator Sue Ross at Eastwood Community Centre in suburban Adelaide. Finally today, to Dr. Tony Coles, Chief Executive Officer of the Australian Association of Gerontology. In this role and in his earlier research work in the tertiary education sector and for the Australian government, Dr. Coles has maintained a strong focus on older men's health and well-being. The phrase wisdom of the elders comes to mind.
Yeah, well, that's a big one. It's certainly one, look, when I talk to the various men that I've interviewed over time, when asked, you know, thinking about when they were younger, and they often would reflect on it as if it was their halcyon days, you know, that they had these bodies that could just keep going and going and that, you know, they're like a bull at the gate. But when asked, you know, would they be prepared to, you know, go back in time, have that body again, if it meant giving up the wisdom that they've accumulated over the years? And no one said yes. No. So they all value their wisdom highly. What they've gained over the years, the experience, the life experience is, you know, gold. It's invaluable. You know, the body is designed to eventually, you know, wear and tear, and we do our best to keep in best shape we can for as long as we can. But our experiences make us; they define us.
Mm-hmm. What you're talking about is sense of purpose. Mm.
Yeah, it's a sense of purpose and a sense of self. It is that identity. While you might invest in your body, and we often talk about this mask of aging. You know, that there's this, older people themselves might not feel as old as what the reflections of a society are telling them they're old. So while they may have a few more wrinkles and a bit more grey hair, they're not necessarily feeling older themselves. There's an ageless self as well. Part of who we are is I guess, invested in that ageless self too. We don't want to feel that we're necessarily getting older, because it has to, it's analogous with becoming more frail, more sick, and these sorts of things too. And if we're not, if we're still feeling well and strong and in good health, which is an important part of it, health, we're not necessarily feeling older. We still often have the same aspirations and dreams that we did when we were younger. Interestingly, I was talking to a man recently who was in his 70s who commented on that very thing. He said, you know, look, I'm post-retirement, but funnily enough, I still have the same aspirations that I did 30 years ago. He said, yeah, it's a shame. I know they're not going to be realised, but it doesn't stop me dreaming and wanting them.
Creative male ageing.
Yeah, very much so. It really is. We're always trying to, and being having the opportunity to and the space to reinvent ourselves post retirement or whatever it means. And which I don't really like that word retirement, because I find the men I often talk to are more busy now with their lives and what they're involved in than they ever were when they were working. Yeah, it is about being creative and having that space to be creative.
Dr. Tony Coles, Chief Executive Officer of the Australian Association of Gerontology. I've also been speaking with authors Dr. Don Edgar and Dr. Patricia Edgar in Melbourne, Dr. Alan Peterson from Monash University in Melbourne, Sue Ross and Peter from the Eastwood Community Centre in Adelaide, Dr. Anthony Brown in Sydney, and to Dr. John Ashfield, South Australian psychotherapist, author and educator. Dr. Ashfield is also project consultant for Creative Male Ageing. This Aspects of Ageing project was made possible with assistance from the Office for the Ageing, Department of Health, the Government of South Australia. From PBAFM in Adelaide, South Australia, I'm Tony Ryan. Till next time, go well.